Hey, it's Lauren Fox, the host of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Andrew Hansen and I have the week off, so take a moment and enjoy some highlights from some of our past shows. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and we are joined by a special guest this week coming off a state championship. And no, it's not Ryan Toscano, who we just had on. This is Dave Schmidt, who's coaching the 10U Bedford Bulldog football team. It's the show of champions this week. Yeah, so Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for having me.
Hey, anytime. Thank you for making time for us. So last year, the team won state. I know from kind of talking through with some people involved with the program, you guys did some things on offense that weren't typical for a younger team, a little bit more complicated, or what people perceived as more complicated. Can you shed a little bit of light on what you put into place for last year's team?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So last year, the 9U team, we were 33 players, right? We combined the Jaguars and the Bulldogs programs together, and we had a great team that wound up going 10-0, and as you stated, we won the state championship. And on an offensive side of the ball, it was interesting because we ran a double wing, and we had a lot of really complicated blocking assignments, including pulling guards and tackles. And, you know, for 9-year-olds, it was one of those types of schemes that I really had questions on whether we'd be able to do it, but the kids did a great job, got better as the season went on, and we also then added a lot of misdirection plays. We had two counts, and we even introduced last year the beginning of a spread offense. So it was great to see, and a lot of times other coaches from other teams last year would come up to me and say, "Are you sure these kids are only 9? So some really good football and kids that really got better as the season went on, which was great to see as a coach.
Right. That's really all you can hope for, is that the players improve and want to continue to come back every year. And for you heading into the season as the coach of the 10U Bulldogs, what was your outlook for the team moving up an age group?
Yeah. So we had and continue to have very high expectations, right? So last year as a 9U team, we won the state championship, and that was the end of the run because of the age group and the way AYF works it. So going into this year, we knew with a 10U team that we'd have the ability to advance beyond state. So we were very, very positive and excited about the prospect of advancing past state. We did lose a few players, but we added 4 more back. So we wind up with a roster size of 26 kids. And from top to bottom, this team can play, right? So we added 2 outstanding new coaches as well with a ton of football experience. So I really felt like the sky's the limit, and I feel that way right now as we prepare to head to Florida. So, you know, we're doing more with the playbook on offense and defense and special teams than we've ever done, and we're going to be adding new wrinkles as we head down to Florida. So a lot of fun, and, you know, again, sky's the limit for the 10U Bulldogs.
Coach, I'm always curious about the X's and O's, and you've got me wondering now with your reference to the playbook and the double wing and then the spread offense. How did the offense turn out this year in terms of the distribution between run and pass?
Yeah, so we're based primarily on run, and generally what we do is we run a smash mouth type of football, but then we get tricky, and as soon as you think you can predict what we're going to do, we change it up. So I have a fantastic offensive coordinator who I've worked with for years, and we've developed this, tinkered with it, and continue to do so. So from a defensive perspective, it's tough to plan against, you know, because when you look at film or anything from us, you see one thing, and then all of a sudden the play changes right on the spot. So we did more passing, and we're going to continue to do more of that in Florida and then prepping for next year. So this playbook has gone now through 3 or 4 iterations, and we continue to build it.
It's a lot to think about. I think it's mind-blowing for some of us, even a little bit older, slightly more mature than 10-year-olds to grasp it. But the fact that these kids are able to do it is nothing short of impressive. We're with Dave Schmidt, the coach of the 10U Bedford Bulldogs, state champions, and heading down to nationals within the next couple weeks. You squeaked out a win in the state title game that got you down to regionals. Was that one tougher than you were expecting?
You know what? The team we play, the Manchester South Sabres, that's a team we have history with. So last year was 9 years. We played them in the regular season and in the state championship, and we wound up winning both games, right? So we beat Manchester South. And going into this year, we didn't have Manchester South on our schedule, but in the back of my mind or in the front of my mind, all throughout my mind, I knew we were going to play him at some point. I even talked to the head coach about that. So when I saw that the state finals for New Hampshire were November 3rd, you know, I had that date circled on my calendar, and we even had a phrase that we called it 11-3 is destined to be, and we knew both coaches on my team and coaches on the Manchester South team that we'd meet again. And we had, as advertised, a fantastic game. A lot happened in terms of we were prepping to play in one location at a certain time. Everything changed literally right before that kickoff, and we had to adjust. And the teams arrived up in Laconia, played a fantastic game, and it was a 19-18 finish, and we pulled it out again. So hats off to South, because they continue to make us a better team, because we're always prepping to handle them, and they've got fantastic coaches and players over there.
It's nothing short of impressive to come through to achieve a goal. We talked about the same thing with Ryan Toscano a little bit ago. You got through state, which was a big goal, but then you have to kind of get everybody still up after you've achieved the goal. All right, you're in regionals. You played the Worcester Vikings, had your way with them. Who were some of your notable stars in that one?
Yeah, so I'll go back a little bit. And so after stage, right, so we win that, and that means we represent New Hampshire in the regionals. What's more impressive, I think, and really for me so far, the highlight of the season was the game before we played Worcester. So we went on our first road trip where we stayed overnight, and we had a meeting with the Meriden Raiders, the Connecticut state champs, in Waterbury. This is the week before the Worcester game. And that was the semifinals for the New England Regional Championship. And they were a tough team. They came out really strong and slugged us. We were nothing, right? First time we've ever been down this season, and only the second time we've ever been behind in 2 years. So I had a question. I didn't know, how are we going to respond to this? So we got the players together at halftime. Additionally, we lost four key players, starters, to injury. They were gone. They were done. So major chance to see what our team was made of. So in the huddle, you know, my coaches and I, we laid out a game plan of what we were going to do in the second half. And what was really neat was the game that was following ours was the 11U Manchester East Cobras, right? And they are the national champions from last year. Their coaches and their players came over into our huddle, talked to our kids, told them what it takes to win these big games at this level, and really reinforced everything we said as coaches as well. But it just showed New Hampshire coming together in a great way. And our team went out, fired up, and we literally executed everything that I had laid out of what we were going to do. And we wound up winning that game 20-13 in a double overtime. So unbelievable effort. And that's what got us to play the Worcester Vikings. You know, I always knew this team had talent, but what I learned in the game with Meriden was that we had a lot of grit. So it's a special group of people that we have, both in terms of coaches and players on this team. And, you know, we get to Worcester, we develop an unbelievable game plan. I mean, we had it ironed out. We knew everything that they were going to be doing, and we had a plan for it, and our kids came to play. So when you ask notable players, what I would say is really we have a philosophy as a team that we are 26 strong, and what we use is a 26-link stainless steel chain that's a symbol of our team, and it's been the symbol all season. And, you know, you ask why is that, but a few reasons. So that steel symbolizes our strength and toughness, and it's stainless because we always want to execute without flaws, and obviously it's a chain, so we're linked together. So everyone helps us win. So I would say that effort in Worcester and the efforts all season have been a complete team effort. So even though there's certain kids scoring touchdowns, when we watch the film, we see the blocking and the teamwork and the things that are happening on those plays and what happens in practice that gets us all to where we want to be. So I'm just really, really proud of everybody, top to bottom on the team.
Well, we can certainly hear the pride in your voice. Dave Schmidt, the coach of the Bedford 10U Bulldogs, New Hampshire state champions, regional champions, now heading down to Florida, which it's tough preparing to get there because, of course, there's practices and there's fundraising and there's so many different levels to get the entire team as well as families down there. But then once you get there, you have a full slate of games and a tight window. So I guess two questions. First of all, if you have any fundraising activities, by all means, share them on air and hopefully our listeners can help out. And then the other thing is, how do you prepare for the number of games that you're going to have in that really tight window?
Yeah, no, great question. So I'll start with the second question first. So we are, I guess it's either a blessing or a curse, but I'm a major type A personality and very organized. So we are, and I am digging into putting everything together, right? And, you know, certainly our team's organizational skills are being put to the test. We're going to go down to Florida, believe it or not, guys, on November 30th. The next day is a coaches meeting that I attend that Saturday. And that's when I get the schedule. That's when I know what bracket we're in and who we're playing. So what we're doing right now, believe it or not, is there's seven other teams going down there, right? So we are one of eight. So in a worst-case scenario, the 10U Bulldogs are the eighth-best team in the country right now, which is really, really amazing, right? And we win some games, we're going to continue to move up. But we're trying to prep for seven different teams, not knowing who we're going to face, and we could – on Saturday, when we head down there, find out we're playing the next day against a team from Texas or a team from Michigan or a team from Florida. So we're going to need to be flexible, but I think we're going to stick to what's gotten us here, and that's really good, solid defense. That's been the anchor of what we've done. So we've talked a lot about the offense, but it's really been the defense that keeps us close and you know, winning in every game. But I'm certain down in Florida when we start to play some really elite class teams that our defense is going to be what keeps us in these games and gives us a shot to win. So that's the plan there. A lot of moving pieces. From a fundraising effort, we're going to be putting a lot out on Facebook here in a short period of time. For us, this is a first-time effort, right? We're learning as we go and building it as we go, but we are doing a bunch of different efforts, and one of them that you'll be hearing about is where in Bedford is the regional trophy, right? So we're looking for folks that will offer to donate some money that we will advertise, and they can hold on to the regional trophy for a day or two until someone else goes. So we'll move the trophy all around Bedford, ideally, and we'll have some other efforts too. So I'll get that information out via Facebook. I'd also like to give a shout out to our cheer team. So we have our 14U and our adaptive cheer teams that are going to be joining us down in Florida. So it really is, it's something amazing, guys, because you start to think about the size of Bedford, right? And the fact that we can bring two cheer teams down, a football team down there, and we're competing against some areas that have a much larger population and a lot more people. And, you know, we're all looking to go down there and have a great experience, but at the end of the day, we just want to make the town proud, and that's going to be our objective, and I'm certain we'll achieve it.
It sounds like with the commitment that you and your coaching staff have made, as well as all the parents have made, I have no doubt. Having fun right now?
You know, it's a lot of fun. Again, you know, as I mentioned, I like to have things buttoned up and organized, but it's kind of fun to be building this as we go. But the players are really... You know, it's when you put the effort in that these kids have put in, they've made a lot of sacrifices. We've been doing this since July 30th, starting out in the summer, doing 4 days a week, 2.5 hour practices. They missed a lot of their summer. They've missed a lot of their fall. They've played in hot weather, cold weather, and their parents have been driving them all over the place, supporting them. And it's just great for all of us because we feel like, you know, we've done something here that's pretty neat, but one of our other mottos is, you know, we're not done yet. So the plan is we're going to keep working and we're going to have fun and enjoy it because this could be in might be a once in a lifetime experience. So, you know, we're creating memories as we go and enjoying the ride.
That's the name of the game right there. Well, Dave Schmidt, best of luck down in Florida. Send us the information. We'll throw it up on our page as well. And certainly we'll let our listeners know. And thank you for the time. Thank you for making time for us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Go Bulldogs.
Go Bulldogs.
Go get them, Coach. Good luck.
See ya. Thanks.
That was Dave Schmidt, the coach of the Bedford 10U Bulldogs, the state champions, regional champions. And we'll take a quick break. Come right back. Listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Hey, it's Lauren Fox, the host of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Andrew Hansen and I have the week off, so take a moment and enjoy some highlights from some of our past shows. Pioneer League All-Star, first-round draft pick. Are we going to your head yet, Grant Levine? How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Doing well. If there's one thing we know about you, none of this has gone to your head. But first season in the books, great season, I think. It certainly exceeded what I was expecting. What did you think of the experience of playing in the minors in year one?
It was definitely a change in kind of like experience for me, just because, I mean, I was never used to playing every day. So, I mean, going from high school where you're playing like three games a week to playing pretty much 7 days a week was definitely a change. So you had to kind of learn how to, I guess, play baseball when your body's not like always 100%. So for me, that was just the biggest change. And then you had to factor in like the bus ride. So, I mean, that was also a big difference. Just because I had to like sleep on the bus, and that was a little bit different.
Yes. Well, as we had a catcher when I was working for an independent team in Kansas City, and he had been everywhere. I mean, he played pro ball in Italy and played in affiliated ball, independent ball, you name it. And he used to describe it about as well as I could think of it. It's not rest, it's sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly. Not anything rejuvenating. It just is this. It's a really good way to pass the time is really what it amounts to. Mm-hmm. So you were young for the Pioneer League and you're facing older pitchers. In a lot of cases, guys who might have been through some sort of minor league ball or had come straight out of college. How much of an adjustment was it for you facing them straight out of high school?
I kind of didn't know going into minor league ball, I didn't really know what to expect competition-wise. So, I mean, my first week there in Grand Junction, I kind of just took BP, and then a couple of days before my first game, I took, like, a live BP. So, I mean, just getting that kind of helped me see, like, get back to high velocity and kind of what that was like. So, I mean, I kind of just made it, had an approach for myself, and I kind of just stood by that. For pretty much the whole season, I didn't really change anything because, you know, I was doing pretty well, so I didn't want to do anything different. So, I mean, I just had myself make an approach or stood to that approach, and it worked well.
Yeah, you really seemed to figure it out quickly because you got off to a hot start, and then you cruised to a .350 batting average for the season. What are two or three of the more memorable hits you had this summer? Maybe your first hit, your first home run. What sticks out in your mind?
First hit, I mean, it wasn't anything crushed. It was a really weird one. It was like a high chopper, and I beat out for an infield hook. So I kind of always remember that one. And then first home run against Idaho Falls, I'll definitely remember that one. That was, I mean, probably one of my better swings of the season. And then, yeah, I'd probably say those two are probably the most memorable ones that I can remember from the season.
What was it about that first home run swing?
I remember, like, my coaches and, like, my teammates were, like, always kind of, like, pepper me because, you know, like, I was, like, supposed to be, like, the big power hitter, and I hadn't hit, like, a home run in the first five games yet. And there's the teammates were always like, Grant, when are you going to hit your first home run? And I was like, I don't know. Maybe tonight.
Is it?
So, I mean, it's kind of funny.
Did you get the silent treatment when you went back into the dugout?
No, I didn't. I was kind of surprised. Yeah, everyone agreed with me, so it was kind of funny.
So basically you called your shot. You said, maybe tonight I'll finally get it.
Yeah.
So, taking it from the looking at the season as a whole, you got off to such a hot start that the pitchers must have tried to change their approach to try and get you out. So, did you notice any changes to how the pitchers were approaching your at-bats, either with the pitch selection or the location or the velocity? What changed during the season?
It kind of varied based on the organization. So, like, I'd say the Dodgers probably made, like, the biggest adjustment towards me. They would go a lot of pitches, either go hard inside with fastballs, and then after that they go soften away with, like, a changeup or, like, a slider. So they kind of trying to, like, pretty much go hard in, soft away, and that was kind of, like, I guess, scouting report on me. And they also kind of, like, after the starting pitcher would come out of the game, they would bring in, like, just like a left-handed pitcher just for me to face me. So they would kind of just try to go for matchups. And then, I mean, then you got the Angels, and they kind of, I mean, I think their organization is kind of like, they believe in throwing a lot of off-speed pitches. And I think that kind of like benefited for me just because not a ton of guys in the league can throw their off-speed for strikes. And when they get behind, they got to throw their fastball. So that kind of benefited for me because, I mean, I think I'm a pretty good fastball hitter. So when I'm able to get in a 2-0 or 2-1 counts, that's really when I'm locked in.
I started to cringe when you were talking about those adjustments because I did not, as a left-handed hitter, I did not like hard fastballs in. I did not like, I didn't like soft away either, and I didn't like the lefty specialist out of the bullpen. So, you obviously had to try to make adjustments to their adjustments. Do you think if you had to face one pitch right now, would you rather have the hard fastball in or the soft changeup away?
I'd probably go hard fastball in. And I just, right now during the offseason, I'm kind of working on some things with my swing that will allow for me to be more like have, I guess you could say adjustability. So like being able to like stay on that off-speed pitch a little longer and also kind of working on like just shortening my swing a little bit. So I can be like short to it, but long through it. So I'm kind of working on my swing to kind of like, how the Dodgers is kind of like attack me.
It's a never-ending battle, and it will only continue. And for you, Grant Levine, out of Bedford High School, now a farmhand in the Colorado Rockies organization, as a player from a cold weather region, you have to be creative in finding ways to prepare for the season. I know you're going to wind up hitting later today, but what do you do year-round to ensure you're ready for whatever the Rockies tell you to do next?
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of the training I'll do is kind of like, I guess, kind of game-like. So, I mean, I'll do, like, a lot of machine work because that's only one of the few ways that you can, like, actually replicate a game at bat. So, I mean, I'll set up the machine to either be, like, a right-handed curveball, right-handed slider, or I'll set up the machine to be, like, kind of mimic a left-handed pitcher. Just because, I mean, during my first season, I definitely hit right-handed pitches better than left-handed. So, I mean, like, I'm sort of working on facing left-handed pitchers with their fastball and their kind of like their off-speed stuff.
So you're obviously doing a lot of things with your hitting this winter based on what you saw this summer. But in general, would you say that you're more focused on improving that hitting stroke or perhaps your defense or perhaps your speed? If you had to pick one, what's most important for you to improve on this winter?
And I'm probably going to work on defense a lot too. Just kind of working on like my footwork around the bag and kind of just trying to be like, well, not as loud around the bag, kind of be quicker, lighter on my feet. So, I mean, I'm going to do a lot of defensive work too. But, I mean, I think, like, my most important tool my biggest tool is hitting and with power. So, yeah, I really want to work on that to make it the best it possibly can.
Joined by Grant Levine, Colorado Rockies farmhand, heading into year two of professional ball. And for you, year one was full of adjustments, playing every day. We talked about bus trips, all that. Our listeners may know this. I like bus trips. And when I was broadcasting, our players used to always think I was nuts because I was the only guy who enjoyed hopping on the bus and just staring out the window. I'm like a dog. What was the longest bus trip that you guys had, and how do you pass the time while you're on the bus outside of sleeping?
So like the longest bus ride we had this year was probably 15 hours.
Hey.
So that would be from Grand Junction to Great Falls, Montana.
Oh my God, man. Yeah, that's a long one.
Yeah, I mean, besides sleeping, I guess you kind of just try to like download a couple Netflix shows and kind of binge those on the bus.
It's pretty much
the only thing you can do.
It was those. I mean, we had buses where we'd have DirecTV.
They didn't have Netflix when you were riding buses.
They'd have DirecTV and people would sit there and argue about what was going to be on TV. It was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
God, what year was it? I think it was 04 or 05. Somebody gave me like a cellular card and a router. So we made the entire bus wireless everywhere. That was
next level.
Next level stuff then. But I mean, still you had the obligation, like you'd prepare. I feel old talking about this. You'd prepare for the bus trip with VHS tapes.
Uh-huh.
And you'd get on the bus and you'd throw the VHS tape in and everybody would groan like, we don't want to watch this again. Yeah, I think I watched Napoleon Dynamite 6 times one summer. So, and that might be a conservative number. But it's good to see nothing has changed. For you, what was your favorite stadium in the Pioneer League?
I'd probably say either the Ogden Raptors, which is in Ogden, Utah.
Yep.
And then either Orem.
Okay. And it's,
I mean,
so
both have like,
go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, both have really nice sceneries. So, I mean, like in Orem, you can see like kind of like the mountain scenery in the back, which is really cool. And then in Ogden, they have like this, like a church that's like stands out in the back, and you can see some of the mountains too. So, I mean, I'd say both of those are like really cool places to play. I mean, and then plus the Ogden fans get really into it, so they're always trying to like chirp you.
Well, and that's the thing too. When you're playing in a stadium that holds 3,000, 4,000, it's easy to do that. And all the, we used to see it, teams have their super fans who are there every game, who have the same calls that they do all the time, and it's designed to get in your head.
Yeah.
Yep. And and you start to think, all right, you get used to watching games on TV, and you say, there's no way that these guys can hear anything or pay attention to anything, but it never ceased to amaze me what guys would pay attention to. One game, one of our catchers who wound up playing in the major leagues for the Giants and the Twins, came up to me after the game. We're sitting together on the bus, and he says, "Hey, Foxy, did you see that guy's pants fall down doing the dizzy bat race along the first baseline?" As a matter of fact, I did. So for you, Grant Levine, what was the craziest thing that you saw happen on the field or in the stands during your first season?
Craziest thing. I mean, one reminds me of like the dizzy bat race we had. I think we did that one. This woman, I think she was so dizzy. But like when you do that, after you finish going like around 10 times around the bat, you have to pick up like a waitress like with some water.
Yep.
And this lady like completely fell sideways like right next to her dugout and like got a bunch of our players soaking wet from the water. So that's the one I'll always remember. Because I remember I was running at the first base, and I hear like this crowd like going, "Aw," and I look over and this woman's like completely on the ground next to the dugout. Teammates are soaked.
Yep.
And I'm like, what the heck just happened?
Yeah, we had the guy in Lexington doing the dizzy bat race, and his pants were probably already low. And so he's turning And he had probably had a couple cocktails or beers at the game. He's turning, and you can see his pants getting lower and lower. And then he goes to run, and his pants finally go around his ankles. And he goes to run to wherever he's supposed to go, but he can't because his pants just tackled him. So now he's drunk, and he's dizzy, and he's naked on the field, only in minor league baseball. And I guess before I forget, too, you guys had out in Grand Junction, you had a taste of a former major leaguer. They had Matt Holliday in the locker next to you. What was that like? I mean, it's got to be something that you didn't expect was going to happen. You have this guy who strung together a really storied major league career now as your locker mate, basically. What did you learn from him?
I learned a lot of stuff. I mean, from hitting-wise, kind of like what he tries to do mechanically that helps him with like his timing and what he believes in as a hitter. And then he was also like really helpful, like nutritionally. He would give us like a lot of advice of kind of like what foods not to eat and what foods to eat. And then like before games, he would just eat like pretty much just a bag of spinach and he'd go out and play.
That's why he had the Popeye forearms.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, the biggest forearms I've ever seen.
Now, the best part always used to be when we'd get major league guys on a rehab assignment was the spread. Like, you'd count on them giving the credit card and saying, just go to Outback and take care of the guys. Did that happen with him?
That's pretty much exactly what happened. he went to Outback, or he gave them the card, and they went to Outback and got us, like, a bunch of steaks.
Yep.
And that was pretty much, he did that, like, twice. That was pretty cool.
Absolutely glorious. And as a front office guy, there's nothing better than going down to the clubhouse after the game and realizing that there's some food there for you, too. So, because, you know, we appreciate that. Now, for you, Grant Levine, what does the rest of the offseason hold as far as we know you're going to continue to train here, but once the calendar flips over to 2019, when do you report to spring training, and then what's the calendar look like for you?
Yeah, so my plan right now is I'm going to go to Scottsdale, Arizona, January 2nd. I'm going to go there for 3 weeks just to, I mean, work with some of the coaches there and get on the field just because I know, I mean, January we're probably going to have snow here, so just be able to get on the field and take ground balls and be able to hit on the field as well is going to be pretty important and something I won't be able to do. So that's part of, and then I think I report to spring training like March 1st.
Not bad. And
so
you get
like the off-season plan.
You get 4 or 5 weeks of spring training, and then it's most likely to all, you know, the next logical step would be low A, so Asheville, North Carolina, in which case probably see me and Hanson down at a game. Or a series.
Oh, yeah.
That's a fun ballpark down there. We've talked about it a bunch up here. That's one of my all-time favorite, if not favorite, minor league stadiums. So if that's the destination, awesome. Certainly enjoyed having you. We enjoy following you throughout the season and wish you nothing but the best. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. That was Grant Levine, former Bedford High star, and now a farmhand in the Colorado Rockies system. We'll take a quick break and come right back. Listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Hey, it's Lauren Fox, the host of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Andrew Hansen and I have the week off, so take a moment and enjoy some highlights from some of our past shows. It is the Bedford High girls basketball coach, Sue Thomas. Coach, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you for joining us. So coming into the season, I think Andrew and I were at the game the other night and almost sort of wondering what to expect. The seniors that you lost last year, Mia Roy, Allie Fillion, among others, and it was a big group of them, but everyone in the starting five this year was on the team that had a perfect 18-0 regular season. So that helps out as far as the culture goes and kind of passing down traditions. But for you, how smooth has the tradition been this season, or in the off season and in the preseason, as those returning players are now the leaders in the program?
Well, it's great to have five returning players. Only Lizzie Stevenson started the entire season last year, but they all got pretty good playing time. But the one thing I did tell the team, the returning players at the end of last season, was to not try to replicate what we had last season. And I'm not just talking about an 18-0 season, but it was just a really special group of kids, all 12 players, just the way they got along. We had six seniors who, you know, really kind of led the way, but it was a very tight group. And when half the group leaves, you don't really know what's going to happen. But so far, it's been really good. The five returning players, especially our two captains, Lizzie Stevenson and Kendi Barnard, have kind of picked it up. We have a very young team. I have three freshmen on my team this year. So we're still trying to come together and figure out exactly who we are. But it's a work in progress, but it's a good one.
Yeah, Coach, we enjoyed the first look at that new group in the season opener last Friday. It was against Manchester Memorial, a game the Bulldogs won 59-47. How did the girls' performance that night compare to your expectations for the first game of the season?
They actually exceeded our expectations. We wanted to win. We went in, I guess, expecting to win is not the right word, because Memorial always puts a good, especially lately, Greg has done a great job with that team. We knew it was going to be tough. What I didn't know is how would the younger kids handle varsity basketball. It's a lot quicker and a lot more physical than they realize until they get on the floor. And although it wasn't necessarily a very pretty game, it was both teams played hard, and we didn't quit. I was worried at halftime that, you know, with all the adrenaline in the first half, that we would let down and let them back in the game. But that didn't really happen. And, you know, we have to work on our offense. We're still trying to get that to come together. But the defensive effort was great, and I was really happy with the whole game.
Joined by Bedford High girls basketball coach Sue Thomas. And, Coach, you alluded to it. You had three freshmen out there who were in the game and out of the game. The difficulty for them and for those who might not have played a sport in front of crowds before is you're sort of jumping in really into the water quickly, and you could see there were some jitters off the bat, but people tended to get acclimated very quickly.
The freshmen did a great job. I don't know if they realized first when they first found out they were on varsity. I think that all three of them were surprised, but then when they were some of the first kids off the bench, you know, they handled it great. I mean, we put in Sydney Suazo as the backup point guard, and she's not, I don't think she's really a point guard, you know, per se, but she handled it. She did a great job. She's very quiet off the court, but she got on the court and just did her thing. And really all the kids that went in, saw that. I was able to get all 12 players in because I thought it was important for them just to get a taste of basketball.
Right. And you could tell with Sydney, too, that even though what you're saying, she wasn't terribly familiar with playing that point guard role, she assumed it well. I mean, she handled the ball confidently getting up the court. And in the instances in that game, and Andrew will touch on Allie Morgan in a second, but in that game, when Allie hit a little bit of foul trouble, you really didn't have a choice. You don't want to foul out one of your leaders early in that game simply because you have nobody else who can bring it up.
Right. Lizzie can do a good job at the point, but I hesitate putting her there because her job is really to find open shots and be a shooter. And in that game specifically, she had the hardest defensive role. So putting her, you know, then having to play point guard would be tough. And that's the one thing. We don't quite yet have a pure backup point guard. We have a couple of girls that will be able to handle it. Marina Braga, who's a sophomore, she can play the point, but they need time. And just based on what we saw at practice, it was just like, all right, Sydney, go. And she handled it great. She did a great job.
Yeah, she really did. And, of course, she first came in when Allie had those first two
right.
fouls.
Right, we had to take Allie out because the last thing I needed, like you said, was for Allie to foul out early.
Right. Well, when Allie came back in the game for the rest of the night, she really was playing just excellent ball. She ended up scoring a team-high 15 points and making three three-pointers. And she also looked very comfortable and confident as she was doing it. What is it about her that allows her to play that way in only the first game of her junior season?
She's really ready. I think if she went to most other schools in the state, she would have been the starting point guard before now. But, you know, playing behind Mia Roy, who just brought, like, this passion, this thing to the game that's hard to describe, you know, made her just take a back seat to Mia. But Allie also did get a lot of playing time at the point last year. So this year she's just ready. And you could, like, she's been chomping at the bit for this. So she was not going to, you know, falter at all. And she is, you know, sometimes it's just like we almost have to calm her down. She's so ready. When she had the two fouls on her, she's like, "Coach, can I go back in the game?" I'm like, "Not in this quarter. You're not going back in." And she was frustrated, but, I mean, she understood it. But, you know, then when she went back in, I think she settled down a little bit. It was also, for her, she's been looking forward so much. She's known all summer that she was going to be the point guard, that, you know, you get out there the first time, you're a little too aggressive, but that's easy. Easier to calm someone down. And, you know, so then, like you said, she went back in the game and was great.
Yeah, she definitely looked ready to take the reins. Now, down in the post, Kendi Barnard and Amanda Jonas had strong performances on both ends of the court. How important will they be to your success this season? And will it be a focus for you to try to have at least one of them on the court at all times?
Yeah, that's the plan. At least one of them needs to be in the game. The two of them have just, they've always been good players, but over the summer, I think they just went to the next level. You know, Kendi knows where she's playing next year. She's going to play at Roger Williams. I think, in a sense, she's a little more relaxed. She was on the volleyball team that went to the state championship game and played a lot. I mean, she was a very key player for that team, so I think that all those things just got her ready to go. And then Amanda's game is just, Amanda used to foul too much mostly because of her movement and footwork. And now she's just a solid player. They can both shoot from the outside too. So the plan is to have at least one of them on the court all the time. And then we have another freshman, Catherine Penick, who I always get a little nervous with freshman post players because they're really not used to what goes on in the key. But she stepped in and she's held her own to be able to give them a rest. You know, the first game against Memorial, she really just went in minutes at a time to give Kendi or Amanda a rest. And then in the South game, she played a lot more.
Yeah, she did look comfortable and skilled enough to not just play in the post, but also to help facilitate for you on the perimeter. So it'd be fun to see her grow.
So, I mean, she's just, we do need to keep Amanda and Kendi on the floor as much as possible. But having Catherine to just give them a break here and there is great. And, you know, she's only a freshman. She's just going to get stronger.
Absolutely. So we're joined here by Coach Sue Thomas of the Bedford Girls varsity basketball team. And, Coach, we saw that during the preseason you were quoted commenting on the toughness of this year's team. What have you been doing to help foster that toughness?
We do a lot of drills at practice that foster toughness, and they've bought into them. I think we do a whole series of what we call toughness drills because we found we needed to start doing that. Playing for Bedford is great in that we have a good winning culture. Playing for Bedford is hard because every other team plays their best game against us. You know, everyone wants to beat us, which is great. So we have to really do more at practice, but they've all bought in. This group actually likes being physical almost, you know, so it's a little different than other teams I've had in the past that have been more pure basketball players. This group isn't afraid to, you know, bang it up, which tonight we're going to need, I'll tell you that. So
looks like it's going to be a tough one tonight. It's BG for those who do not know, and I guess for those who do not know, we're recording the show on Friday and the game takes place on Saturday, but it will be a tough one. It's always a tough one when you face off against BG. And in thinking about it, as I struggle to find my questions again, this is brilliant. Tonight, third game of the season at BG. What do you think the keys to the game will be? Of course, they have a very experienced team, and it seems like they just sort of rebuild every year. How do you, in game number three of the season, compete with that?
Oh, it's going to be hard. For this year, for them, they didn't rebuild. They just kept going. Just like us last year, where we had pretty much the same team as the year before, BG has pretty much the same team. They lost one key player for them, but they filled in fine. The key tonight is taking care of the basketball. BG is extremely tough. They all go for the ball. They read the plays very well. They jump into passes. That's all we've been working on the last 2 days, is taking care of the basketball, finding the open player, going to the ball, taking care of the ball, and then getting back on defense. This game is going to be tough for my team. I'm not comfortable with the team yet going into it, but at the same time, you know, it's only the third game of the season. So I think we're going to learn a lot about our team, about what we still need to work on, about what's going well, and, you know, hope for the best. But, you know, if we don't come out on top, we will take what we've learned and build on it, because I have a lot of confidence in my team. It's just, we are still young, and playing an experienced team this early in the season is going to be very tough.
Right. It's always a challenge, particularly when you've rebuilt, as it were, even though it's with players who you're experienced with and they're experienced with you. It's difficult if they haven't really played significant minutes in a game like that. And at least now, game three of the season, you can build on it, and you can, if you come out on top, great, but there are always going to be things, particularly against a team like BG, that you can focus on to continue to improve, win, lose, or draw.
Absolutely. You know, we went undefeated in the regular season last year. That was not our goal. Being undefeated is never our goal. We are going into the game tonight to win the game. But as long as we take something out of it, learn to build on it, get everyone a lot more experience in really tough battles, that could be just as good as winning, to be honest with you. I know it sounds silly, but in the regular season, I think, you know, it's more important to keep growing than to just win games.
I couldn't agree with you more. So, spoken like a true coach. Sue Thomas, coach of the Bedford High girls basketball team, thank you for the time, and we'll see you out on the court soon.
Great, thanks.
Thank you. We will take a quick break. Come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Hey, it's Lauren Fox, the host of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Andrew Hansen and I have the week off, so take a moment and enjoy some highlights from some of our past shows. Mark Elmendorf, who is the boys' basketball coach. So, Coach, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me.
Hey, thank you for joining us, and thank you for allowing us to be a part of the season, too. You graduated 7 seniors last year, and that group was a group that really accounted for a lot of offense, rebounds, assists. They were the ones that filled up the stat sheet for you. What has been the process in getting basically an entirely new group of players ready to lead this season?
It's been interesting, and you're right. We did. We graduated a huge, huge portion of our team, all just wonderful young men who have gone on and are doing well in college and all that. But, you know, we had a busy fall season. You know, even though we graduated so many people, we did have, you know, several returning players on the varsity. And then we had a very good JV team who, you know, played well last year. So they've all stepped up, and, you know, we're moving on. It's been nice. I know that one of the other things people ask me all the time is, you know, we have a significant amount of football players that are playing. They've added a tremendous amount of leadership after such a successful season, and that's been really helpful as well.
It's interesting that you mention it, too. You mentioned the football players, and we said something about it on the air the other night. Thomas Morgan looked comfortable, and he didn't really, at least we didn't see him have any varsity minutes last year. I know he was playing JV. But it's almost as if the action on the football field really prepared him to be one of the leaders going into this season.
And that's 100% correct. Thomas has been such a pleasant surprise. He was a junior on the JV team last year, which was unusual. I don't normally do that, but because of the amount of seniors we had, I thought that was the best place for him to get, you know, a significant amount of minutes playing, and that helped him. He had a great summer with us where he showed that, you know, even though football is probably his number one sport, basketball was still important to him, and he played a lot with us, and even though he was busy with the football. But Thomas has been huge for us. He's shown great leadership. His play has been great. You know, I don't know what he had, 21 the other night, 20 or 21. But he's been great. Tremendous, tremendous surprise. So I've been thrilled with that.
Yeah, it was fun to see him lead the way there in that season opener on Tuesday that we enjoyed calling here on Bedford 105.1 against Nashua South. And the entire starting five was all new from last year. Along with Thomas Morgan, you had Timothy Green, Harry Leguyon, Zachary Guerin, and Justin O'Neill out there. What did you think of their first performance as a group, as a starting five?
Yeah, I think they did great. You know, it's funny. You know, we talked about Thomas, but Timmy Green is, you know, the brother of a former player, Liam Green, who was, you know, so instrumental in some things we did. Timmy's a really good perimeter shooter, a very, very good defender, a very, very good athlete. You know, Harry Leguyon is a godsend. He's a linebacker on the football team, but he's our power forward and our quote unquote leader on the team. He's he had the most returning experience, so he's been great. And he'll be the first one to tell you he did not have a great game Tuesday, so we expect him to certainly play better in the future. Zach Guerin is a senior who is out for basketball for the first time. Tremendous, tremendous athlete. Big, big kid, strong. He played great. 10 points. I don't know how many rebounds, but played really well. And then Justin O'Neill is a junior, and he is clearly our most skilled player. 6'7", handles the ball well, shoots from the perimeter. He's a special player. He's really good. So I think he played the entire game, all 32 minutes. But I thought they played great, and I certainly think they're going to get better as well.
I want to go back to something in there that you mentioned and almost kind of got buried in the conversation. Zach Guerin hasn't played at all, 4 years.
Never.
But he has great instincts. I mean, you watch him on the court, his positioning is good. He seals off real well, boxes out real well, creates space with his body. So, yeah. I mean, he doesn't look like he's never played.
Well, he's never played for us. He's been here at BHS for 4 years. He's played in the Fitty League, and he's played, you know, in the summer with different things. But he's a kid who's a serious football player, and he's worked out 365 days a year to become a great football player, and he's very, very good. But football's over, and he said, you know, I'm going to play basketball now. So I was thrilled that he came out, and I actually had to talk to him several times before the season, but he's been a godsend, and he's just a wonderful young man who works his tail off. He's been fun, really fun to coach. Very coachable young man.
That's an amazing free agent pickup right there.
Yeah, seriously.
You're not kidding. And what's going to be fun is, you know, we're going to go into opposing gyms this year, and nobody knows Zach Guerin. And it'll get out quick, but he's going to help us tremendously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got to know Harry Leguyon last year as sort of the guy who would do all the dirty work, get the rebounds, get offensive rebounds and putbacks. But now to have two guys in the paint who are going to do that, I mean, that's going to give you us.
And then the third guy is Justin O'Neill, who's taller than both of them at 6'7", but can do the other things on the perimeter that Zach and Harry can't. So that helps us.
Yeah, that's going to give you quite a front line.
That's
and
fun.
You know, we noticed Justin O'Neill, he's obviously been working on his skills over the summer, but he also has grown. He was listed at 6'4" last year. Now he's listed at 6'7".
And I think he's actually closer to 6'8".
Okay.
He's a big kid. He's a basketball player 365 days a year. That's the only sport he plays. He's a kid that can play at the next level, I think. He's a great, great kid who works hard. He's one of our captains as only a junior. Just a tremendous young man.
So in that season opener, the team really seemed poised down the stretch. In the third quarter, you had to overcome them making 6 3-pointers, I think it was, and you held on to win 65-63 against a team that just would not go away. How much confidence is your group going to take from that first win?
You know, it's a good question. I was disappointed in our perimeter defense that we gave up 9 threes in that game. We cannot do that in the future and win. But we fought back, or I don't know if we ever lost the lead. But, you know, I think we had it up around 10 a couple times, and then they whittled it down. And I think the kids did show tremendous, tremendous poise. You know, Thomas Borgen handled the ball well. As a team, we only made 10 turnovers in that game, which is pretty good for a first game. So I was pleased with that. I thought we shot better than I was not expecting to shoot as well as we did, because that, I don't think, is one of our strengths. But Thomas was 7 for 12 from the floor, and I think that helped the percentage. But it's a good group of kids who, and this is what I tell everybody, they know how to compete. They get after it, and that's, for a coach, that's pretty much all you can ask for.
Right. That's one of the most critical things for you. The team heading into things, of course, you've hit on a number of different players that we have on this roster. Justin O'Neill, a big one, bringing the ball up the court. They seem poised, too. It wasn't as if you were dealing with a callow team. It seemed like these guys had been there before and were nice and settled by it.
Well, and you're correct. And the nice thing that you brought up was, you know, Justin O'Neill bringing the ball off the court. We have a huge advantage with Justin because he does handle the ball so well. Justin right now for opposing teams is going to be a nightmare, mismatch nightmare. You know, at 6'7", who can handle the ball and play on the perimeter like he does, that gives us a huge advantage. And he's not going to turn the ball over, certainly not significantly. That really helps us as a team. So I'm hoping that will, you know, allow us to calm down in pressure situations and things like that. That's a huge advantage for us.
Do you think he's done growing?
No, not even close.
Seriously?
No. Oh, no. He's absolutely got a couple more inches in him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's a very young junior. No, he's nowhere near done growing.
That one play that stands out to me from that first game was when he was going along the baseline and he had his back to the baseline. He made that acrobatic layup.
Right.
Managed to.
Yeah.
When you have long arms like that, you can.
But to have that skill to do it is another thing.
Yeah, he can play way above the rim. I mean, there's going to be several highlight films this year with Justin. He's a good player. He's a really good player.
So for the Bedford High basketball team, and of course we're joined by Dave Elmendorf, or Mark Elmendorf. Why am I tripping over my words?
You think
now?
Of Dave Schmidt.
Dave Schmidt, maybe.
10U football.
You think I would know better at this point. Your second game's tonight against BG, and then you're playing a couple games a week. What are you focused on in the first part of the season to try to get the team to continue to improve, particularly, and I know we've hit on some of it with some of the raw players, but to try to get some of these guys to reach their potential?
Well, that's the goal, is to just get better every game. BG is going to be a huge game for us tonight. They're certainly ahead of us in the preseason type stuff. They're going to come out and they're going to play really, really hard. I'm glad it's at home. They're a big team. But I think the thing that people forget, we had, you know, 9 solid kids play the other night, which at the varsity level is a good number. 4 kids came in and off the bench: Jordan Dyer, Connor Butts, Trey Ravenel, and JT DeLacy, who all, you know, may not have scored a bunch of points or anything, but they came in and the team the level of play did not drop. So that was a huge thing for us. It allows us to get a little bit of a rotation going substitution-wise. Kids can get a rest. You know, Zach Aaron, for instance, certainly needed a rest in that game a couple times. Same thing with Harry. But, you know, we just have a goal of every day we go to practice, we work hard, we try to get better, we're prepared, and we leave it all on the court.
That was certainly clear the other night, and I'm glad you cleared up something. We kept calling him Richard Ravenel, but
apparently he's Trey.
We now know he's Trey.
Well, he's Trey. His real name is Richard, but everybody calls him Trey. I'll tell you, Trey's been great. He'll be the first big guy off the bench, and he's good. He's been a pleasant surprise, and a tremendous attitude. So it's been good to work with him.
Yeah, that also reminds me. We joked during the broadcast on Tuesday that as that lefty, kind of lanky, floppy
yep.
brown hair, he reminded me a little bit of Nick Mokas, who was there watching.
There you go, yeah.
How was it to have a lot of those guys from last year, the seniors, back to support you in game one?
You know, this is my fourth year, and I tell people all the time I'm blessed to coach here. The quality of the kid that plays here is just unbelievable, and to see all those kids come back, you know, Nick Mokas was a special young man who's doing great up at UNH. Chris and Steve Chartier were there. They're up at UNH. Max is coming tonight. He's at Fordham. Just great, great, great kids who I just love to death. I mean, just wonderful, wonderful people.
It's obvious the feeling's mutual. They're coming back to see you as well. Well, Coach Elmendorf, we appreciate the time, and know you have a busy rest of the day, and we'll see you tonight for the game against BG.
All right, great, thanks.
Wonderful.
I appreciate your help and support.
Hey, thank you, and
our pleasure.
And we appreciate it too. Hey, it's Lauren Fox, the host of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. You've been listening to some of our past highlights. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we hope you have a wonderful sports week.